Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, providing ways to treat mom with fresh, hand-selected flowers this Mother's Day.
John DeLynn was one of the first people to embrace the podcast. Before they were everywhere, DeLynn had created one to talk about his church. He called it Mormon Stories. In those days, he was an active Latter-day Saint, but one who had started to doubt or at least have questions about all the things you can imagine in the Mormon story, the truth claims, the church's position on social issues, the character of Joseph Smith. So he talked about those things on the pod. And church leaders thought DeLynn crossed the line. In 2015, he was excommunicated. And for more than a decade, they mostly left him alone. But last month, the church sued DeLynn in federal court for trademark and copyright infringement. They objected to what they said was DeLynn's use of church-protected images and design elements and names, and one name in particular, Mormon. The church says it holds the trademark on Mormon, at least particular uses of it. In their statement, they say this is about brand confusion. That is, when Mormon is used by someone else in their branding, like Mormon Stories, it could cause people to mistake it for something official, something from the church itself. The statement says the lawsuit is not about DeLynn's viewpoint or his content. Now, why they decided to wait until now to do this is one of the questions in this story, but John DeLynn says it all started late last year.
Sometime in November, I remember receiving an email from Intellectual Reserve, the LDS Church's intellectual property arm that enforces all of its intellectual property. So I get that email, and it basically says, hey, we feel like you're violating our trademark and our copyrights, and we would like to have you fix several things. It mentioned the usage of the color blue in my logo. It mentioned a photo of Russell M. Nelson used in a thumbnail. Oh, they also mentioned they didn't like that we were using like light rays in one of our banners. My response was, okay. I immediately changed my logo from blue to orange, even though I didn't really believe that they owned the color blue or that they owned rays in branding. And I fixed any thumbnail that they expressed a concern with. And I went one step further. I sent them a Google spreadsheet and I said, here's a Google spreadsheet. I'll give you full access to it. List every single instance of any sort of copyright or trademark infringement that you have, and I will fix it. I didn't want a hundreds, billions of dollar organization suing me. If you think about how Scientology treats its critics, they use lawfare to destroy people's lives. You start to wonder, is it possible the church will turn towards Scientology methods to achieve its ends? Yeah, I was terrified. Basically, they said, nope, we need to do mediation. There were two full days of mediation. At the end of the first mediation, we gave them a final offer, and they wouldn't accept it. We did another full day of mediation, and it was clear they wanted more and more and more, and we just said, we don't think it makes sense to keep doing mediation. We've already done so much. I don't know exactly what conversations went on between attorneys, but it was, you know, a month or whatever later where I found out they had filed a lawsuit. You know, Margie and I we rarely travel for fun, but we just happened to be gone on a Friday visiting some friends. My memory is that someone texted me, I think the church put out a press release. They're suing you. As soon as I find out, I go to Instagram and I'm already seeing faithful Mormon social media influencers podcasting about it. And before I know it, Jasmine Rapoli, who is, I think, the church's top apologist these days, she's releasing a video about it on YouTube. And I'm just reading thousands and thousands and thousands of comments from faithful Mormons saying, what a snake, what an evil human. Clearly his intent is and has always been to deceive innocent faithful Mormons into thinking that his podcast is sponsored by the church. The first thing that came to my mind is that this might lead to violence that could harm me and or my family. The second concern was this might be the end of Mormon stories, because how in the world are we going to be able to defend ourselves against a church that not only is worth hundreds of billions of dollars, but it owns its own law firm with, what, 200, 400 attorneys? How do you compete with that? And then the third concern was, this just feels unfair. Am I going to rise up to respond to this and to fight it? Or am I going to quit and fade away?
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Technically, this is a case about trademark and copyright law. But, of course, that's not all that's going on here. There's other stuff in here, too, about religious identity and motives and free speech. I should mention we reached out to The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to be part of the show. DeLynn makes particular claims about the early legal negotiations, and we were hoping to get a response, so we reached out to them last week. And we haven't heard back. We have, though, invited them on the show to talk about the case anytime. John DeLynn is being sued, so you can hear that in how careful he is with his language. He frames things as being the best of his recollection and that they reflect his own opinions. So let's start with his opinion of one part of the church's account. They say they proposed a simple solution, a short disclaimer saying Mormon Stories isn't affiliated with the official church. And they say that DeLynn turned it down.
So for me, there's two monstrous, if I want to be kind, mischaracterizations in those two statements. If I want to be angry or unkind, I would say lies. So the first was that they proposed a simple solution, a brief disclaimer. That's not all they proposed. They asked us to renounce any trademark rights we would have on the name Mormon Stories or Mormon Stories Podcast. They asked us to change the name of the podcast.
To what?
The mediator proposed Ex-Mormon Stories with Dr. John DeLynn, or Post-Mormon Stories with Dr. John DeLynn, or Hidden True Mormon Stories with Dr. John DeLynn. But they didn't just ask us to change the name of our podcast. And by the way, all of those names, number one, are egregiously long. I know the church's name is egregiously long, but to
you're just saying aesthetically, this is a difficult thing. But I guess what's the problem, though, with – because this gets at your identity. It seems like one of the things that you have a problem with that is it's not just for ex-Mormon stories.
You know, Mormon Stories does 2 to 3 episodes a week, and it has since its beginning. We interview Patrick Mason. We interview Terrell Gibbons. We interview –
these are Latter-day Saints.
Yeah. We interview faithful Mormons all the time, every month. Mixed faith couples. Like, I would go as far as to say I'm unaware of any other weekly Mormon-themed podcast that is as balanced in terms of who it interviews than Mormon Stories. None of the apologetic Mormon podcasts or YouTube channels interview critics or people who have left the church in any meaningful way. And then a lot of the really critical ex-Mormon podcasts are just about criticizing. Where can you find faithful Latter-day Saints, mixed faith marriages, critics, never Mormons, fundamentalists, all the different types of people that fall within the broad Mormon cultural umbrella? Where can you find those people being regularly interviewed on a weekly and a monthly basis? It's always been Mormon Stories' mandate to interview faithful, liberal, progressive, inactive, ex, and never Mormons.
You had mentioned one of the this has seemed so specific that I wanted to ask you about it. You had mentioned that one of the demands or suggestions, I don't know how to put it, was related to the font size
of your
logo.
So they not only wanted us to change the name of the podcast, they said specifically – you have to include all these words on your logo, X Mormon Stories with Dr. John DeLynn. And they said you can't have like with Dr. John DeLynn in a little signature or a smaller font size. You can't have X in a smaller font size, but then Mormon Stories in big and then Dr. Yeah. John DeLynn.
Yeah.
They wanted it to be an unusable, ugly, horrible logo, which in my mind, again, spoke to their intention of damaging our brand. And ultimately, by the way, they seem to want to suggest that they have no problem with the word Mormon. They started mediation with an email that said, we have a problem with your use of the word Mormon and your use of the word Mormon in your domain name of your website and the use of the word Mormon in your social media handles. That's how they started. Even before mediation, they sent us a letter saying that was a core problem for them. So if they don't care about the usage of the word Mormon, why were they trying to change the name of our podcast?
How do you understand their sense of ownership for the name Mormon, given that, and this is something you've talked about, and I think some people listening will know, everyone listening will know that the church for several years, since 2018, has tried to distance itself from the word, the name Mormon. So how do you understand this in that context?
So growing up as a Latter-day Saint, I was aware that we weren't supposed to call ourselves Mormons.
Really?
I was.
Okay.
But it wasn't a terrible thing. But the extent to which we could use the full name of the church and the name Jesus Christ, because I grew up in Texas where Mormons were viewed as a cult. Hmm. So what's the best way to counter that? It's to always mention the fact that Jesus Christ is in our name.
You're in the Bible Belt, so use Jesus as much as you can.
yeah, right. So I knew that decades ago.
Yeah.
But obviously, it was kind of schizophrenic for the church or confusing to like embrace the I'm a Mormon campaign around the time of the Book of Mormon musical and the Mitt Romney campaign. But then when Russell M. Nelson becomes prophet and president, for him to declare to the entire church that any usage of the word Mormon in relation to the church or to a member's identity is what he called a major victory for Satan. And when he did that, as someone who had hosted Mormon Stories podcast for now 10 or 13 years by that point, I was like, great, that makes sense. Like, I think it's good that he's trying to emphasize Jesus Christ in the church's name and in its culture. And he's kind of freeing up the word Mormon to be what makes sense, because Mormons includes, you know, members of the Reorganized Church, fundamentalists, ex-Mormons, like the Mormon History Association, the Mormon Studies programs. Like, you know, I think of the word Mormon like a Jew thinks of the word Jew. Not exactly the same, but comparable. It's a culture. It's a people. Hmm. It's a heritage. It's a tradition. It's Jell-O. It's casseroles, right? It's Donnie Marie Osmond. That's what Mormon means to me, and all the church stuff, and the fundamentalists. It's everything. And so I was happy when the church abandoned the usage of the term, because that's how I always considered the word and the podcast to be. It was always about the big, broad Mormon culture. So obviously but I also knew that once – you know, I'm a tech guy at heart, and when the church starts – you know, removing Mormon from the Mormon Tabernacle Choir and redirecting Mormon.org to what, Latter-day Saint whatever.org or whatever, you know, it's killing its SEO. All the search engines that were pointing to all these Mormon-named assets all of a sudden don't have anything to point to anymore. That was very damaging to the church's PR. But
John, do you know that if you did a search right now, the likelihood of it coming to your website, if you search just Mormon, there's a decent chance it will come to Mormon Stories.
Well, I'm told that's one of the reasons why they abandoned the term, not just because they were losing the SEO battle and they didn't want people coming to critical or open-minded, fair podcasts.
Yeah.
They realized that the Mormon reputation was, and I think still is, as low or lower than like atheists and Scientologists and Jehovah's Witnesses and Muslims in the United States. So they realized at some point their brand, their identity, their reputation was so damaged. I think they intentionally decided to abandon Mormon as an SEO term because they had lost the internet battle, because we all got to podcasts and blogs and YouTube and Instagram and TikTok before they did. So we won the SEO battle, and they lost the reputation battle so badly. I think they decided that it would be smart to pivot to Jesus Christ. Good for them. But I think they probably pretty quickly realized that was a mistake. And, you know, I wish they would just own up to that mistake. But when a prophet, you know, tells the world and the membership that you can't use the word Mormon, it's hard to unwind that. And I think that's the pickle they got themselves into.
The church has said this in their statement. The primary issue is ongoing confusion about whether Mormon Stories is affiliated with the church. So I want you to respond to that. This seems the least, I'll put it this way, grounded in common sense. And I know that doesn't sound great, but it does. How credible is it to say that if you went looking for, if you went to your website, your podcast, that you'd be confused that this was somehow the official website or blog or podcast of the actual church? I just want you to respond to that.
Yeah. So like if you go to our YouTube banner that we've had for the past 3 years, my face is by far the most prominent visual thing in the banner. It's huge. Same with our Instagram. Same with TikTok. It's all over my blog. I want faithful Mormons who are open-minded and anyone else listening to think about this. I was excommunicated in 2015. It was tweeted by the New York Times. It was an international news story. I'm not saying I'm a big deal. I'm just saying, how long has the world known that John DeLynn is an apostate and possibly archenemy number something, top 10 in the church? They've known that for a long time. And we all know that President Nelson, demonized the usage of the word Mormon to the point where all of us who are ex-Mormons have been constantly barraged by faithful Mormons saying, please stop using the word Mormon. We're not Mormons. It's not the Mormon church. Like I say, we've received thousands of those types of comments and emails over the years because the members all know it. So how in my mind, even if blue was a color chosen by my graphic designer, Doug, even if my graphic designer decided to incorporate a Christus into one of the banners, how in my mind could anyone ever be confused that if my face is there, if I start every podcast by saying I'm Dr. John DeLynn, and if it has the word Mormon in the title, how in my mind could it even be possible in 2022 or 2023 or 2024 that a faithful Mormon is going to go, oh, this is clearly a YouTube channel and podcast sponsored and run by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints because it's run by their number one apostate excommunicated member. And it uses a word that the prophet has denounced as a victory for Satan. How could anybody ever be confused about who runs Mormon Stories podcast? And again, every episode I start out by saying, hello, everyone. Welcome to Mormon Stories podcast. I'm John DeLynn. So anyway, this idea that we have been intentionally deceiving people into thinking that Mormon Stories was a church-run podcast, it doesn't even bear initial scrutiny, in my opinion.
John DeLynn, he's the founder and host of the Mormon Stories podcast. We'll take a break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, providing ways to treat mom with fresh, hand-selected flowers this Mother's Day.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the LDS Church's lawsuit against John DeLynn. He's the host of the podcast Mormon Stories. He's been a persistent and very public critic of the church for more than two decades. But for some reason, the church is suing him now. And they say it's not about the content of the podcast. It's that Dallin has violated their trademark. They want him to stop using the name Mormon in his branding, among other things. So this is giving us a chance to talk about the legal fight, but also the influence of critical platforms like Mormon Stories. And then, of course, there's the question of who gets to claim the name Mormon. Let's get back to our conversation with John Dallin. Patrick Mason said to us, he put it this way. He said, Mormon Stories is a big fish. That is, the church perceives it as a big fish. He talked about how successful you have been. There's no doubt, he said, that those within the church see you and Mormon Stories as a challenge. And he didn't pretend to have any real numbers, but he did say this. He said he thinks that a lot of people in church headquarters would, and I want to quote him here directly, would say that Mormon Stories has been a primary driver of many, many people, thousands, maybe tens of thousands, maybe more people, deciding to leave the church. Now, I have to say, all of those titles to those programs you just read make some kind of a case for that, that you're not exactly promoting faith-promoting ideas necessarily. So I just want to give you a chance to respond to the idea that how do you react when you hear that?
Well, I mean, because this is a lawsuit, my first reaction is, what does that have to do with this lawsuit? I mean, the church is claiming it has nothing to do with the content of my podcast. So the fact that I...
Let's just say that in a statement, they say it has nothing to do with the with viewpoint. It's just about trademark.
So what, my first answer is, why would that matter if the church is claiming that has nothing to do with it? But...
Well, the church isn't saying that. I'm asking. That seems to be an impression that the church does feel a challenge. Whether they'll admit it or not, Patrick Mason is saying it, and I think others might say it. I think you can understand that.
No, for sure. Yeah. I think I'm not the biggest fish. Alyssa Grenfell has twice the YouTube subscribers that I do, and I don't want the church to go after Alyssa Grenfell, just to be clear. But I guess I would say I don't see myself as an enemy to the church. I don't think I've ever told a single person in 21 years that they should leave the church. I don't think I've ever done a single episode with the intent of having people leave the church. What I would say, first of all, I've surveyed and asked my listeners and viewers whether it was Mormon Stories that led them out of the church. And I would say 90%+ would say that they lost their faith in the church first. That made them open to even considering listening to something like Mormon Stories podcast or seeing us on YouTube. And then the value they got from Mormon Stories podcast was to help them not feel so alone, to help them not feel so afraid, to help them, you know, figure out how to navigate their marriage or their relationship with their parents or with their community. Yeah. And that was always why I started Mormon Stories podcast from the very beginning. But I will even add, let's just say for the few people who would say that they first learned about Joseph Smith's polygamy or the second anointing or whatever from Mormon Stories podcast, is that Mormon Stories causing people to leave the church? Or is that learning about Joseph Smith's behavior that's causing people to leave the church? Or is that the church misleading and hiding its factual history from its members for a couple centuries that sets people up to feel misled and deceived that causes them to leave the church? I'll just go on record. I do not want to weaken the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I never have. I do not want to take people out of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I never have.
Can I ask you about how you're thinking of the landscape now, what you're seeing out there? And by that, I mean the different platforms and the way people are talking about Mormonism and all of these issues. I'll go to Patrick Mason again. He says that you are, this is how he put it, you're one of the truly significant figures in Mormon cultural life, and your approach has been significant. But that's just – you're just one thing now, which I'm guessing you'll probably – agree with. There are younger voices, there are different voices, there's even a growing sort of seems like counter movement from apologists online. He calls it the Wild West. Do you agree with that? What do you see in the landscape?
I mean, Yeah.
You're not the only game in town, I guess.
I love it. I love it. Bring it on. Like, yeah, there's Secret Lives of Mormon Wives and Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. And there's all this new crop of faithful Mormon social media influencers. Like, I go to Instagram right now and I'm seeing these faithful Mormon moms showing off their bare shoulders.
Yeah.
Or bragging about, hey, my husband's the bishop, but I'm going to the Circle K to get a Diet Coke. Like, so much good has come from the transparency and openness that the internet has brought in terms of Mormon culture. It's kind of like what the faithful Mormon apologists are saying now is what we were saying 10 or 15 years ago that the church excommunicated us for saying. And so I do feel like Mormon culture has moved in a positive direction. I mean, you could buy a caffeinated Coke at BYU now. You couldn't do that 10 years ago, right? Garments have gotten shorter. Women can work. Like, there's so much good. The church is less hostile towards the LGBTQ community. Like, there's so much good that's come from it. I love it. I love it. I love that my critics are coming after us because at least there's a conversation there, you know? And, yeah, I love it all. Bring it all on. Bring it all. But I do wish the church – this is weird. You're not going to believe this. I wish the church was handling it better. Like, remember when the Book of Mormon musical came out and they came out with that response where they said –
In the actual play – playbill.
Yes. You've seen the musical now. Read the real thing.
Right.
Like, that shows a sense of humor. Yeah. It shows wit. Why can't the church respond to me that way? Why can't they come on my podcast? Let me come on theirs. Have an open dialogue. And worst of all – why they know about the Barbra Streisand effect. They know they're driving new viewers. Can I tell you how many people have written me and said, hey, John, I had no idea you existed. I'm an Elders Quorum president or a Faithful Relief Society member. I'm resigning my membership now because now the church is suing you and I believe in free speech and I think they're trying to silence you and I didn't know you existed. Like, the church is too smart to be acting in such a self-destructive way. I wish they had better consultants. Because I don't want to hurt the church. And I don't want – worse, I don't want to see the church hurt itself. And I really believe it's hurting itself by how it's reacting to me.
Let me play you a clip. Again, this is Patrick Mason. This is something he told us. I asked if he thought basically what you're saying is that this is a strategic error on the part of the church, that it's going to sort of ignite that Streisand effect. Here's what he said.
I think we can never forget the fact that in the church, people believe that they're in the salvation business and that some things are worth paying a price or a cost. And if it's determined internally that Mormon Stories, because of brand confusion, is preventing X number of people from giving the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints a fair shake, an honest listen when the missionaries show up at their door, then maybe it's worth a little bit of bruising in the public reputation in some other outlets in order to hopefully carve out some space to pare back the influence, so to speak, of Mormon Stories.
I mean, the church is so fabulously wealthy. You have to ask whether they're truly in the soul's business or if they're in the business, first of all. I don't mean that to be sarcastic, but $300 to $500 billion, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. I think Patrick highlights my biggest concern that I just voiced, which is if it's truly about souls, like, do you think the church benefited from excommunicating me and Kate Kelly back in 2014, 2015, and Jeremy Runnels and Bill Reel? If the church is in the soul's business and what they're doing every time they excommunicate somebody is project fear, project insecurity, show that they're a bully, and then draw more traffic to these people, does that show that they're really in the souls business, that souls are their top priority? Because there are smarter ways and more Christ-like ways and more loving ways to treat your so-called enemy. What if the church, instead of excommunicating me in 2015 or Kate Kelly in 2014 or all the other people, what if the church, or Name of the Mormon, like, what if the church had actually said, hey, let's have a dialogue. Let's start a weekly panel like Meet the Press. And John, you'll represent the left in the church, and we'll have Richard Bushman or someone else represent the right, and let's have someone in the middle, and let's just have healthy, vibrant discourse. Then I'm not an enemy. Then I'm not, feeling angry at the church from their perspective. We're having dialogue. They're projecting security. People are getting educated. Like, if they truly cared about souls, I believe they would be operating very differently than they're operating now. What they're operating right now is like a corporation, which is when you think your trademark is violated, you're talking about trademarks and copyrights to begin with. That sounds like McDonald's or Sony. That doesn't sound like Christchurch. But then you're litigious and you sue people. I don't think their behavior shows that souls are their top priority because it's so grossly ineffective. I'm frustrated because when I started Mormon Stories, it was an act of faith that our church could be big enough in 2005. Our church could be big enough, confident enough, trusting enough, faithful enough to have honest, truthful conversations. And decade after decade, they just show they're unwilling to do that and are reaping what they've sowed.
John DeLynn. He's the founder and host of the Mormon Stories podcast. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for Radio West comes from listeners like you. Become a member at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has filed a lawsuit against John DeLynn. He's the creator of the long-running Mormon Stories podcast, one of the church's most publicly visible critics. This is a trademark and copyright infringement case. The church claims DeLynn and his nonprofit, Open Stories, are using church branding elements in ways that could mislead the public. And we were interested in what kind of impact John DeLynn has had on the church and where Mormon Stories fits in a growing landscape of critics and apologists. We talked this week with two historians and scholars who focus on the church. Patrick Mason is a professor of religious studies and history at Utah State University, and Matthew Bowman is an associate professor of religion and history at Claremont Graduate University. Church officials say their lawsuit is narrowly focused on intellectual property, that they don't want to influence or silence the podcast's content. But of course, that question is out there. Patrick Mason told us if you want to understand what the lawsuit is about, you could start by taking the church at its word.
They, like any organization, cares a lot about the way that they are perceived out in the marketplace. And that seems like kind of a crass term to use when you're talking about religion, but that's where it is. There's all this competition for market share, for audience, for attention, for views, and to make sure that you are protecting your brand and the integrity and the quality of your brand. So I think for them, it's about protecting the integrity of the brand. I think on the other side, for John and for Mormon Stories, it's about freedom of expression. It's about the ability to talk about things and not be what he would say is being censored.
Matthew Bowman?
Yeah. The church's long struggle, going back 100 years now, to be on the one hand distinctive, on the one hand not like any other Christian group in the American landscape, on the one hand exclusive, and on the other hand really, really concerned about perception, about being perceived as, to whatever extent normal is, normal. To being perceived as not threatening, not hostile to the American project. Those two impulses do sometimes compete with each other. It's hard to have them both at the same time, but trying to balance the two of them has been what the church has been trying to do ever since the end of polygamy, trying to have it both ways to some extent. And that's, I think, really embodied in the very, very small microcosm of this particular legal dispute.
So there's that copyright law dimension to the story that's not necessarily in your wheelhouse. So I'll stick with the questions more in line with your expertise. But what can you say about the kinds of things you can or can't own or copyright? And let's go right to the term Mormon, because it seems like in some ways this story is in large part about the contested name Mormon. So say something about that. Who can claim to own that name? Can anyone?
Well, it's a lot like some other terms, like, say, Christian. You know, who can own the term Christian? And if you ask any particular Christian group, if you ask the Pope, for instance, the Pope will tell you, well, I am the vicar of Christ on earth, right? I have special claim to that. If you ask Southern Baptists, they will tell you, well, the Bible is infallible. The Bible is unique among texts, and the Bible defines what the term Christian is. And so within any of these groups, if you're looking at this through their epistemological lens, right, they will say, well, we have the particular revelation that allows us to control the term. And that is also true within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. However, at the same time that those set of claims exist, we also live, in the United States particularly, in a country that has a lot of different religious groups making a lot of different claims, some of which may be contradictory to each other. I think that when you boil it all the way down, there just simply is not a good way to resolve this problem. It is going to be a tension that humans always live with. As long as there are some people who say, I'm going to draw three red squares on the wall and call it art, and other people who will say, that's not art, my two-year-old could do that, right? All of these concepts are ultimately essentially contested, and we're just going to continue having fights about who owns them and who doesn't.
But Patrick Mason, it doesn't seem like the church is thinking about the term in an abstract way at all. It's thinking about it in quite legal terms, that they own Mormon, and therefore it's why they've initiated this particular lawsuit. So what do you make of that question?
Yeah, ultimately, the lawsuit will hinge on legal issues. It will hinge on copyright law, intellectual property law, trademark law. And that's different than kind of cultural terms or nomenclature that we use just broadly. Part of the analogy or an analogy that a lot of supporters of the church have used is something like Kentucky Fried Chicken, right? They're now known as KFC. They want to be known as KFC, but you can't just go down the street and open a store called Kentucky Fried Chicken. They still own the trademark and the rights to Kentucky Fried Chicken. Now, they don't own the word Kentucky. They don't own the word fried. They don't own the word chicken. Right. Anybody can use those terms anytime in everyday language. But when you're opening a commercial enterprise, and this is what trademark law and intellectual property law and all of this regulates, it's not the language that you and I use every day or how we talk about it on the radio. It is how you use it in a legal commercial enterprise. So I do think there's two conversations here. And a lot of people will say, well, nobody owns the word Mormon. Yeah. That's true in a cultural sense. But in a legal sense, you can actually – organizations, institutions can put trademarks on certain terms.
If the law and courts measure your commitment to your brand by how aggressive you've been in trying to protect it, and Mormon Stories has been around for 20 years plus now, that doesn't seem like it seems like that question is going to be raised, because one of the questions here is, why now all of a sudden? How are you both thinking about that?
Well, for me, that is a big question. Why now? And I think that's what makes this case really interesting, is that Mormon Stories has been in operation for a long time, well before this was ever an issue for the church. You know, it's only in 2018 that President Russell M. Nelson makes this a big issue and starts to swing the church away from using the term Mormon.
Yeah.
You know, a year or two before that, they had a huge I'm a Mormon ad campaign, a big national and international ad campaign that was very successful on lots of fronts. And then they did a 180 under President Nelson's direction, a very successful one internally. They've been very concerted about moving away from that term internally and encouraging other people to do it. And here we are 8 years later, and you know, Mormon Stories existed for a decade and a half before 2018. And I don't see that anything particular has changed in the last few months that they might point to some things that, you know, Mormon Stories has continued to change its logo and color schemes and other things like that, as organizations do. And they say that tracks too closely to the church's own color schemes and logos. Again, who owns blue? You know, in some ways, these seem like silly questions, but they're not silly questions when there's, you know, again, for organizations that are trying to protect their brand and their image. So why now? I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
This question of being confused, as the church says, that they don't want people to go to the Mormon Stories website and be confused that this is an official site of the actual church itself. That seems to strain credulity, frankly. I mean, how credible is it to say that someone who goes to the Mormon Stories website, just objectively, or their YouTube channel, or, you know, whatever, could be confused that it's an official site of the church? I mean, doesn't it seem quite obvious that if you just look at the way they're if you didn't even need to click on them, if you just looked at the titles themselves, you would be quite clear this is a site that's critical of the church. So what do you make of that question that the church is saying that people are – they don't want people to be confused? How is that – are people – objectively confused, do you think?
I don't know. You know, I can't speak to the level of other people's confusion.
Yeah.
And it could be, this is where you'd have to talk to an intellectual property lawyer. Maybe there's some technical argument to be made, you know, in the law about brand confusion, right? That is different than a kind of common sense conversation that we might have it. I agree with you. It would take you exactly 5 seconds on Mormon Stories to figure out that it's not an official product of the church, any more than the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives is, or something like that.
Right.
The thing to keep in mind, and I think sometimes we forget this in Utah, and I think some of us who, you know, have spent a lot of time around the church as members of the church or observers of the church, sometimes forget the degree to which most people in this country around the world know nothing about Mormonism. And so when they watch a Netflix special, no matter how ludicrous or fringe it might seem to anybody who knows anything about the actual experience and beliefs of members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 2026, that's their only reference point. It might not be brand confusion in the sense of like somebody thinking this is an official podcast of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but somebody coming from the outside. And of course, the church is very invested in spreading the message to people outside. Any level of confusion there, or, you know, again, hurting the brand by using a term associated with the brand, what they would see as really problematic for most people who really their knowledge base is practically zilch.
Well, it leads to, and this is probably a longer conversation, but let me just get you to say something about what you perceive as the landscape of criticism in the social media landscape. What are the characteristics that you've noticed outside of Mormon Stories, for example? That's been sort of, in terms of like legacy critique organizations, that's been in place for a while. I'm wondering if what you're noticing in terms of sort of the newer version, younger influencers, I guess I'll put it that way. What are you noticing these days?
Boy, you know, I think the first thing that comes to mind, right, is the proliferation of reality TV and reality TV influencers. And and with the announcement there's going to be a Secret Lives of Mormon Wives Orange County that features people who are not actually Mormon wives, but are merely kind of proximate to Mormon wives or who know Mormons, right? That in and of itself, though, I think is telling, because it is, I think, illustrating this progression that's been going on for decades now, which is to say this sort of assimilation of people who are any brand of Mormon into the broader contours of American popular culture. The essence of Mormonism on the show, The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, is actually quite low. And it is simply, you know, these are people who happen to be Mormon having the same sort of soap opera-ish exploits that people on any other reality TV show might have, right? And so the use of, I think, Mormonism as a slight quirk rather than a full-on identity, the divestment of real kind of theological content, and the consumption of this by people who, again, have no stake in the church one way or another, I think is the most fascinating thing here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the landscape or the constellation of media critique of the church has changed along with, you know, the way that the technologies have developed. I mean, from blogs to the long form podcasts to TikToks. I mean, John DeLynn, I think we have to recognize, I think, is really one of the truly significant figures in Mormon, and I'll use that word advisedly, cultural life in the 21st century. He's been around for a very long time. Mormon Stories has been, you know, in the midst of all this technological change, it has really been a constant. And the basic approach and the form that he takes has been, you know, pretty consistent over many, many years and has had, I think, pretty significant effect over many, many people. The listenership is really significant. And so, but that's just one thing now. There's this proliferation of other voices, you know, especially younger voices. I mean, we all get older, so there's always somebody younger. And so younger voices, you know, hot takes, you know, things that actually probably people commenting on things that Mormon Stories covered 15 years ago, but is brand new to them because they're 21 years old and learning it for the first time. It's the Wild West out there in terms of the number of platforms, the type of platforms, the type of influencers and people talking about it. What's remarkable about Mormon Stories is just its longevity and its continued influence.
Do you think this is a mistake strategically? I mean, there's just such a thing as the Streisand effect, the Barbara Streisand effect. When you, in an attempt to try to hide or censor or suppress something, you actually make it more visible, more widely known. Is there a danger of that from the church's point of view, if you want to say?
I think in some ways, this is a sign of the church trying to grapple with how publicity works on the internet. The sense that, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, lawsuits like this are sort of abstruse, would not maybe have gotten a very, very wide range of coverage, but the internet has transformed that. And if nothing else, John DeLynn is very, very good at the internet. It would not shock me if the church had not anticipated the degree to which stories like this travel on the internet and blow up on the internet.
Yeah, I'm going to try to think on the other side of the equation. And assuming that whichever people were in whatever room and decided to pursue this did so, you know, thoughtfully and carefully and thinking through some of these kinds of questions about whether it's worth it. What does this do for our brand to go after another brand?
Yeah.
I think we can never forget the fact that in the church, people believe that they're in the salvation business and that some things are worth paying a price or a cost. And if it's determined internally that Mormon Stories, because of brand confusion, is preventing X number of people from giving the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints a fair shake, an honest listen when the missionaries show up at their door, then maybe it's worth a little bit of bruising in the public reputation in some other outlets in order to hopefully carve out some space to pare back the influence, so to speak, of Mormon Stories. I don't know whether that's a conversation, but I think we can't forget that the leaders of the church believe that the stakes are very, very high. They're higher than just kind of market share or whether you can win a court case. They're about whether people can hear the gospel of Jesus Christ as taught by this church.
Final question. Let me just make it quick and ask for a quick response. Is this going to chill speech, chill use of the term Mormon in other environments?
A quick response to that is no. I think if anything, you know, the internet is a democratic arena, and the sense of a large organization trying to Bigfoot anybody on the internet leads to, I think, more speech.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Mormon Stories is really a kind of singular case, given its size, its significance, John DeLynn's own personality, and the well-documented story there. And the church keeps insisting this is not about speech. And so by the church's own arguments, I think it still leaves a lot of room for people to continue to exercise free speech, including use of the term Mormon.
That's Patrick Mason. He's a professor of religious studies and history at Utah State University, director of the university's religious studies program, the Leonard J. Arrington Chair of Mormon History and Culture. And Matthew Bowman, also with us, an associate professor of religion and history and the Howard W. Hunter Chair of Mormon Studies at Claremont Graduate University. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Instagram at Radio West. We're on YouTube at KUER 90.1. You can email us at radiowest@kuer.org. Our intern is Aidan Oneida, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. I'm Doug Fabrizio.